Welcome back to the Make or Break show, where each week we bring you stories of incredible makers and the make or break moments that have defined them along the way. I'm your host, Brandon Cullum, and this week we chat with woodworker William Walker, learn how William grew his shop and business through storytelling. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. Hope you are doing well and your October is going great. We've got another fun one for you this week, but as always, at the top of the show, we want to thank the wonderful supporters over on Patreon. If you guys would like to support the show, you can head over to patreon.com/make or break show. Your support helps keep the lights on, helps keep this coming out every week, as well as potentially funding some fun stuff for the future. You guys, there are some different reward levels, some different things you guys can get, including some extended interviews, as well as some opportunities to get on some of these podcasts and get your questions answered with our upcoming guests. So be sure and check that out. Again, that's patreon.com/make or break show. All right, so jumping into our interview this week, we're hanging out with William Walker from William Walker Co. You probably have heard him or seen his stuff. He's got a YouTube channel by the same name, as well as he is one of the hosts of the Creators Collective. That was a podcast that actually Johnny Brooke started. It was the Crafted podcast, and he has since left, and William replaced him. So Will hangs out with ZH Fabrications, Zach, as well as James Wright from Wood by Wright. Actually, all three of those guys we've had on the show before. So Will is the last one to come on, but it's a really fun one. He is woodworker through and through. He makes some really cool pieces, really unique pieces. And so we get into kind of his design process, how he thinks through designing. And this one was actually really interesting because we kind of compare and contrast Will's style, especially because he also produces videos online, but he's real narrative driven. And so if you guys know Chris Salamone, 4S Furniture, who's been on the show before, he also is kind of telling a story as well. And so I kind of put them in the same category just in how they produce their content, but in their actual what they make, it's totally different. So we get into that. A good, interesting way to think through how to tell a story through a build. So how to keep people engaged, how you wrap a story, not just, hey, I want to build this thing, let's build this thing, but Will does a really good job of incorporating other elements. He's storyteller. He's got a background in that. He's also a wedding photographer. And so he's got a bunch of camera and video knowledge. We get into that a little bit, as well as just being an incredible woodworker. But we get into a bunch of different things. Will is great. And without further ado, let's jump into an interview with Will Walker. All right, guys, welcome back to the Make or Break show. We're hanging out with the one and only William Walker from William Walker Co., William Walker Photo, all kinds of William Walker stuff, calling in from Central Virginia. Thank you so much for jumping on and chatting with us.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so excited to get into your story and your background. I definitely came across your stuff the first time just through your videos, and what I liked about yours compared to almost everybody is like it was like a bigger story that you were telling, and it wasn't just like this is how to build a bookmatch cherry table. Like, let me tell you the story of like why I'm building it. I'm like, oh, this is cool, and then like you get into the video side and the photo side. I'm like, oh, he probably knows how to use a camera. And so getting into more of your background, it's like, oh, cool. He's got a cool kind of way into it. But I was listening, I guess, to a Q&A that you did on your channel a while back. And you mentioned that you were into like skateboarding as a kid. Is that how you first got into video stuff?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. So through middle school and high school, I was big into skateboarding. And we had a local skate park where I met a bunch of other people that also skated. And in my high school, I didn't really have a whole lot of, I had friends, but I wasn't really into my high school scene because where I grew up, I was right on the line of where you would go to one school or the other, you know, different school districts. So from elementary school, when all of my friends went to one middle school, I went to the other one and had to make all new friends. And then when I graduated middle school, all my friends went to another high school. And so then I had to make all new friends at this new high school. So I never really had close ties with those people in my high school, but through skateboarding, you know, it was people from all different backgrounds, all different walks of life, all different schools. And we all kind of bonded over skateboarding. And then we, you know, leave the skate park and we go out street skating and, you know, get run off by the cops and stuff like that. But I got into a photography class in my high school because I wanted to take pictures of my friends skateboarding. And then I, you know, thought that I wasn't good enough to get sponsored and be a professional skateboarder. But as I got more and more into photography, I thought maybe I could take that to where I could be a professional photographer, photographing, you know, my friends skating, and then they would get sponsored and I'd be in all these magazines and all this stuff. Well, then I found jobs and girls and skateboarding kind of fell by the wayside. And one of those jobs was working at a video store. And the video store, and this is back in the day for all the younger people where, you know, we still had VHS tapes. And DVDs were like, you know, kind of a brand new thing. But we specialized in these, you know, really critically acclaimed films and foreign films where it wasn't just like a blockbuster, where we actually had like a really deep back catalog of the really important films. And one of the perks of working and managing this store was that you got early access to all of the films coming out before before anybody. And so I would just binge watch like all the films that were coming out. And I studied filmmaking and kind of what made great films great and went through the back catalogs. And in parallel with that, I had moved on with photography, but then also started doing some video stuff and learning editing. And this is when I was, you know, 14, 15 years old. And when the technology wasn't that great. And so I learned about kind of rhythm and syncopation and pacing that comes with film and putting skate videos together and you know, kind of sponsor me videos for other friends. And that kind of evolved to where now I'm managing this video store. I'm making videos. I'm into photography. It turns out I was actually pretty decent at photography. And I actually started working for my high school photography teacher, shooting weddings with him on the weekends. So that's two jobs now. So shooting weddings, managing a video store, and then over the summers.
I'm
still in high school
at this point.
So I'm still in high school. Okay, gotcha. And then over the summers, my dad is a contractor and I grew up building houses with him. So I was on the job site from like 12 years old on. I think when I was 12 over Christmas, I got a 22-ounce S-Wing framing hammer in my Christmas stocking. And it was kind of like, guess what you're doing this summer, Will? And I was like, all right. So I was working these three jobs, so construction, managing a video store after school during the week, and then shooting weddings on the weekends. And so fast forward, I graduate high school. I went off to art school for photography, decided that art school really wasn't for me, and left art school and apprenticed with some photographers in the Richmond, Virginia area. Shooting weddings, kind of learning the business there. So fast forward, I am running this successful wedding photography business in the Charlottesville, Virginia area, and my wife is pregnant with our first daughter. And guess what? She's due around June 5th, which in Virginia is the height of what they call wedding season, where everyone's getting married, that everybody's planning their wedding around June. And I can't take any of the work, you know, on 6 weeks, you know, either side of the due date. And so I'm just kind of sitting there not working on the weekends. And I have all this camera gear and equipment. And so I thought, well, I'll take, you know, kind of my background in, you know, film and video and photography and turn it inwards and start kind of just you know, shooting video of the things that I was making in my spare time to kill time while I wasn't shooting weddings. And that just kind of evolved. I put my first YouTube video out, trying to generate buzz around kind of a new business that I was thinking about making, which was furniture building and woodworking. And I put it out on YouTube, and like almost zero local attention was brought. But now I was having people from Spain and Portugal and the UK, Czech Republic, Great Britain, commenting on these videos, and it blew me away. And it was this whole global audience, and I just couldn't stop after that. So,
So going all the way back to like the decision to take photos mm-hmm. of your friends skateboarding, like why do you think just pictures from the get go like attracted you?
I've always been very visual. Combing through the skate magazines and seeing, you know, just these incredible photos of, you know, not so much the tricks that the skaters were doing, but, you know, the kind of these celebrities, these photographers that became celebrities in the skate world, like people like Atiba Jefferson, kind of pushing the boundaries of what you could do with a photo in skateboarding. They're bringing on generators and lights to these, you know, secret skate spots in Southern California, and, you know, just getting really creative with the tricks. And I don't know that always pushed me. That's a tough question, Brandon.
Yeah. No, but so why do you, why do you enjoy capturing those moments now? Cause I mean, mm-hmm. you still do photo full time. Is that right? Yeah. And it's kind of a mix on the making time.
I don't know. I wonder if it's a left side, right side of the brain type of thing, where it's photography is a very technical art and technical profession, but it's also very much artistic. So I wonder if I like the technical side of photography and kind of pushing the bounds of, you know, what you can do with a camera, because the technology, I mean, you know, now that everything's digital, you know, the sensors are getting better and low light performance is getting better, but the technology really hasn't changed in the last 40 or 50 years. I mean, it's still, you know, just a shutter, a lens, you know, an aperture. I wonder if it was just the challenge of trying to make better images out of, you know, something simple, the mundane, the, you know, making things interesting and kind of capturing the world around me. You're really making me think deep.
No, that's cool. The photo side, is funny, cause I did like rock climbing in college. And so I wasn't like good enough to like be doing like the cool climbs and stuff. I'm like, but I'll get up on a rope and I'll take pictures of you guys. So I get to still like hang out with the people doing the cool stuff. I'm just like,
yeah, that's very much the same. Yeah. Where you weren't good enough, but you were good enough at, you know, maybe taking the photos of the people good enough that you got to hang, you know, with these, you know, local, you know, in that circle, were like the local celebrities. They were like the cool kids, you know, like, if I could turn it inward on you. So I'm actually looking at your background and it's very, very photo, oriented. It looks like you've got some backdrops, some C stands and things like that.
Right now? I'm in a studio right now. For people who are just listening to like audio stuff. I'm at my office, I get to use this equipment, but I do a lot of their like production video, audio, all that kind of stuff just for the day job as well. So whenever I see people that like do the same thing and then make two, I'm like, okay, like I get that. Like that's neat. Cause you get to bring like the video skills to the actual making side of things, absolutely. Which is fun.
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail your interview. I just
no, you're totally fine. You're totally fine. Going to owning a business, especially like a wedding photography business. I know a lot of people, maybe they're doing the making as a like a side hustle, or they're building furniture on the side, but they have hopes of owning a business. Like, what is it? What's it like to run your own thing? Like, to be dependent on yourself for your income? Like, it was it what you expected? Like, outside of that video store, like, have you had quote unquote like a typical like 9 to 5?
I've had, you know, a multitude of just random odd jobs, you know, 9 to 5. And I, you know, from 17 years old, I knew that I could never work for somebody else. I grew up where my dad ran his own business, and working for him, you know, he taught me that, you know, the work ethic where, you know, as a teenager and you'd want to slack off, like that wasn't acceptable. where it's kind of like, well, yeah, how are we going to get this done? And, you know, he just kind of looked at you and like, you just get it done and we can't go home until it's done. type of thing. I have had other jobs, 9 to 5s, where I've, you know, kind of worked with the bureaucracy of the tiered, you know, manager system. And I knew that I couldn't work for somebody else because I couldn't stand, for instance, I worked for an audio video retail store. It's called Crutchfield. It's actually a national company, but it's based here in Charlottesville, Virginia. Yeah. So I worked at their really? Retail okay. store, and their outlet, you know, their kind of outlet stuff would be sitting in the back. And they had a program where you could recycle your old audio video stuff at the store. So if you had like an old audio receiver, you could just drop it off and we'd recycle it for you. But so there are some very affluent communities around Charlottesville, and somebody would buy the newest, greatest, you know, receiver, and then they would just take the old one and they'd say, oh, well, can you recycle this for me? But it was a perfectly good receiver. And so I would go to my boss and I'd say like, hey, like I know we're supposed to recycle this, but this is a, you know, $600 receiver and they just wanted to upgrade to the next model. You know, can I take this? And he'd be like, no, you can't. We have to recycle it, you know, cause that's, you know, what we said we would do. And, I just, you know, just that kind of bureaucracy, it just drove me nuts. And so, you know, From a young age, I very much focused on being self-reliant on my own business. And so it is scary, you know, especially in the lean months. But it's also very freeing, and it also makes you very responsible for your own actions. You can't, you know, point a finger and say like, well, I would be doing this if, you know, this is the if, you know, it's like, why aren't you doing it? If you're not making enough money, then make more money, you know, like work harder, you know?
Right.
So yeah, it's, it was scary, but it's kind of all I've ever known, you know? So I started my business at 18 years old.
Yeah.
And you know, I worked for other people, you know, worked for other photographers, you know, until I had my portfolio, until I had, you know, kind of the reputation that people would say, okay, like he is a good photographer. He's a, you know, I can rely on him. And you get to experiment too with when you're second shooting with somebody else, or when you're working in a cabinet shop over the winter, like when there are no weddings happening, you learn a lot from other photographers. You learn a lot from cabinet makers, you know, their tricks, and then you kind of incorporate that in your own style. And, good, excellent question.
I was listening, I guess, to the most recent episode that came out, because you guys aren't recording this week, right? Did I hear that right?
We're not recording this week. Zach, one of our co-hosts, is in Europe this week.
Oh, gotcha. And this is October 10th. But, so next week is your 100th episode. Is that right?
That's right. Yep.
That's awesome. You were, I think, mentioning that like you had like an cabinet install, and like the drawers like weren't there, or the doors the right size and all that kind of stuff. Compare it, like what's like, cause like I want people to kind of get the mindset around especially on the wedding photo side of things. Like what's the stress like when like on a wedding day versus like when you're building like custom furniture, like is it similar or is like one way more stressful than the other, or is it just totally different?
I got to say, it's totally different with the weddings, because I've been doing it for so long. I've probably been doing it for about 15 years.
Okay.
It's with a wedding, it's very much more about managing expectations and personalities and being kind of this gregarious guy, you know, kind of just taking control of the situation. Yeah. And like, even if things are going wrong, kind of not pretending things aren't going wrong, but just trying to make the best of a situation. You know, if it starts raining or something like that, you know, you try to, you know, keep a smile on your face and just talk to the bride and be like, hey, you know what? Like, it's raining, but who cares? Like, you're only wearing this dress once. Like, let's go have fun in the rain. Yeah. And that is a very different, because I know my photography, like my technical skill in photography, I've been doing it for so long, it's very much second nature. Yeah. Like, I know how to make a good exposure. I know how to check, you know, to make sure that my focus is on. I know how to look for certain moments and when they're going to happen and anticipate that. You know, wedding ceremonies, I mean, I've done so many of them that I'm rarely surprised about, you know, any kind of pacing in a wedding ceremony. And so that is almost second nature. The wedding side is very much managing personalities and things like that, where the woodworking and cabinetry side is you're very much relying on, you know, your skill to get the job done. And you can't. So I made these. So for anyone listening, what Brendan's talking about is I was doing these built-in cabinets for a client. And they're not super exciting. Like I don't love making built-in cabinets that are going to be painted white. It's just kind of a boring thing for me. I don't, you know, being a very visual person, I get super jazzed on, you know, highly figured woods and, you know, kind of letting the wood speak to the piece, speak for the piece. But this job came along and I had a little gap in my schedule where I could fit this job in and they needed it like now. And I was like, yeah, sure. So I went to go install the cabinet doors on the lower cabinets, and I had made the cabinet doors an inch too short. I didn't account for the overlay on top and bottom of the doors. And in that case, it was stressful because you can't make that work. Like, you can't make the best of a bad situation. Like, the doors, if doors are too small, they're too small. So that was stressful. I had to go pick up more soft maple, get back to my shop, you know, mill it down, make these doors, and then take them back to the job. That was a fixable situation. But it's a different stress. It's totally, it's a totally different stress.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you mentioned a lot of like client or managing expectations. And I can imagine brides are about as high maintenance, or brides' moms are about as high maintenance as you can get. Like, are there things that you found have been helpful? I know you don't do maybe a ton of client builds, but for people that are building maybe custom furniture, like, are there things that you found helpful because you've been on the other side of that too, especially on the wedding side?
About managing client expectations and managing high stress people? It's about giving them a reasonable, you know, don't promise them the moon and then take 6 months to do it. If somebody contacts you and says, you know, I want this, you know, live edge book matched dining table, can you source the materials, or maybe you already have them? And then B, you know, think logically and reasonably about the timeline. Okay, how long is it going to take me to source the materials? How long is it going to take me to flatten the tops? How long is it going to take me to actually do the glue up? Basically give them a reasonable expectation for timelines. So after you say, yeah, I can do it, like, it won't take me that long at all. Don't give them a, you know, won't take me that long. Give them, it's going to take 6 to 8 weeks, or it's going to take, you know, and so they're not emailing you or calling you next week, where's my table? And you haven't even, you know, started. You have any blue, you know, like, that's, yeah. And sometimes it's just grin and bear it too. You know, like, not every client can be that wonderful, awesome, favorite client. Do the job the best you, to your ability. Try to, you know, don't take shortcuts and I don't know.
That's good. So why, why did you decide you wanted not to just do the woodworking just as a hobby, but it seems like you're like pursuing it more as a second business as well. Like, was there a moment where, like, I could make this more out of this, or kind of what were you thinking through
that? Yeah. So that's a really good question. When I started making the videos, so I need to backtrack a little bit. I forgot about one of the jobs that I had that kind of plays into my story. So growing up in construction, one of my dad's best friends was a cabinet maker. And in the infancy of my photography business, where I wasn't that busy over the winters and I needed to make some extra money to pay my bills, I asked him if he needed any help in his cabinet shop. And he said, yeah, absolutely. So I was working in this cabinet shop, at a production cabinet shop, you know, making these custom kitchen cabinets. And that's where I kind of learned the finer side of working with wood initially. So, in construction, you're working with rough framing, 2x4s, nail guns, things like that. And then, the cabinetry side, where in construction, you're worried about, maybe an eighth or 3/16 or a quarter of an inch. In the cabinetry side, you're talking like, 32nds of an inch, And to work with more precision tools. But I was working in this cabinet shop, and I thought it would be cool to offer my photography clients picture frames. So I asked this guy, hey, can you teach me how to make picture frames? He was like, yeah, sure. Like, just stick around, one afternoon after we're done, and I can, run you through it in 30 minutes. And I was like, okay, cool. Well, so I started making picture frames for my clients, and then, you make a picture frame, and then you make a little wine rack, and then you make a cutting board, and then, just kind of snowballs into this, the woodworking making bug. And then you start looking at everything a little bit differently, going like, oh, I can make that. Oh, I can make that. So I wanted to make the picture frame business a business to go alongside with my photography. And then as I got, more and more into woodworking, the picture frames weren't as exciting. And then, I started doing the video thing, and I knew that something was there. Like, I could feel it. Like, with my background, it's a very, unique background with, carpentry, video store managing, skateboarding, photography. I knew something was there, but I didn't know what. So I wanted to pursue that. So I just kept making videos and kept building things, and it kind of garnered more attention from people, like, wow, Will, your stuff is really, really beautiful and unique, and your attention to detail. And I'm not trying to totally talk about myself, but, and everything you do is awesome. And as I worked more and more weddings on the weekends, and now that my daughter was born and I was taking time away from my family on the weekends to shoot weddings, I thought, okay, well, how can I, kind of shift from working every weekend to a more traditional 9-to-5 work week? And I just kind of started pursuing it more and more from there, like relying on the income of my photography business to kind of float me and kind of fake it till I make it until I got this business where I could rely on the woodworking and the video side of things. If that answers your question.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So are you at that point now? Like, is the hope to kind of pull back from like the wedding photography and go on the furniture side?
So yes and no. I would like,
listen, okay.
Yeah. So I would like to have a more balanced work week, like I was just talking about.
Okay.
I don't want to abandon wedding photography completely, but I'd like to be able to be more selective about the weddings that I take.
Okay.
So weddings, people usually plan them around the prettiest times of the year, in our area, where I don't really get to experience all the fun stuff that our area has to offer with my family because we're shooting weddings. So I'd like to be more selective and say, okay, you know what? I'm not going to take, two weddings that weekend. I'm only going to take one of those weddings, or I'm not going to, I don't want to work weddings in the month of October. And I can rely more and more on the woodworking side of things. And So I just launched recently my online store where the things that aren't client builds or the things that aren't, you know, necessary for, you know, my home, things that I just wanted to experiment with, furniture, bowls, small things, that I can put up online on my store. And hopefully, you know, people will find that interesting enough to buy. and then also take on more custom commissions, like these, you know, built-in cabinets or a coffee table I'm about to build or a live edge bench that I made and I recently just sold. So yeah, I think I am at that transitional point where I can take less and less weddings and rely more on the William Walker Company side of things.
On the building and the furniture side of things, I know a lot of people will split between they're like selling commissions or they're doing products versus they're creating content around it and like selling sponsorships and that kind of stuff. So are you doing like a mix of that as well? Or is it, are you still really wanting to go towards the custom pieces and selling like physical things?
So I've always felt odd about this. You know, I got into this kind of YouTube world, you know, as a way to generate buzz around my furniture business, you know, and the actual physical pieces that I was making. And then the attention from sponsors kind of came just as a byproduct of that. Yeah. So like, for instance, I do work a lot with Grizzly Industrial, and they actually contacted me. Like, I didn't reach out to them or anything. It was really cool. I received a letter in the mail with one of their catalogs, and it was from the son of the president of Grizzly Industrial. So, and the president and founder of Grizzly. And it was basically just like, we love your channel. You know, if you'd be interested in working with us, we'd love to work with you. Let's set up a phone call type of thing. And I set up a phone call. That's cool. And I talked to the guy, and like, we became fast friends. He's just, you know, he's got two little girls. I've got a little girl, you know, they're similar ages. We're similar ages. He just kind of got the power of social media and, you know, so now we're buddies, you know, it's that's cool. So, you know, working with Grizzly is awesome and they don't really ask a whole lot of me where, I mean, other than to, you know, show their machines in my shop, obviously. But it's, you know, it's a really good relationship where I've worked with other brands where they kind of want to give you a script of what to say. And that's not really what I do.
Yeah.
Because I'm very, like you said at the beginning of this interview, you know, I'm very story driven. I'm very, you know, it's the story of why am I building something, not like, hey, let's take a break for a minute and like, you know, read this script of, you know, oh, Nutella, I eat it every day on my toast. And, you know, like it's, so yeah. I would like to work with brands more and more if they, you know, kind of let me do my own thing. I also don't like chasing a dollar that way. Like, I don't like being kind of a brand whore. Sorry. If I'm not allowed to say that on the show, but, yeah, I don't like being a brand whore and I do get called a shill all the time in video comments. You know, every time I mention Grizzly, everybody goes, oh geez, there goes Will again, talking about Grizzly. And I feel like that's some jealousy and some, you know, like I sold out or something, but you know, I very much feel like if somebody else was put in the same situation that they would also pursue a relationship with a big tool company.
Yeah. Tools are expensive. Yeah.
You know? So no, I'd like to focus more on the actual furniture, and make a living that way. And then other brand stuff, you know, as it comes, I've got a very weird schedule, as we've been trying to make this podcast happen for a long time. That, you know, if a brand sponsor or wants to do a sponsored video, they kind of want it, you know, on a timeline and, you know, I'm not going to put out a video that I don't love, even if I have to redo it every time, you know, and it's going to be a month late, it's going to be a month late. And I'd rather want the pressure of getting the piece of furniture out than trying to get the video out.
So going to the video side before the woodworking side, when you approach a video, are you usually trying to think through a narrative? Is that kind of the, like the genesis point? Like there's some type of story I want to tell, or is it, I want to build this, so let me figure out the story, or kind of a mix?
It's kind of a mix. If I want to build something just to build something, and there absolutely is no story, I'll just make it and I won't film it. Then, you know, when I take on a job, a custom commission or something like that, you know, there usually will be a story, and the story can be as simple as, you know, we have this wood, we want a table, can you make it? You know, I'm a very three-part story person. So, you know, there's, you know, an introduction, you know, a beginning, a middle, and an end. So there's an introduction, rising action, climax, and then denouement, you know, the resolution. So if I can find those pieces in a furniture piece, that's kind of how I go about. So I guess it all starts with, you know, a piece of wood. And whether I bring my camera into the shop and turn it on. If I think there is going to be a story, I'll film it, and I might not necessarily make a video from it. But if I film everything and then I think that the story is there, that's when I'll bring it into my office, you know, bring it to my computer and start loading footage. And then think about what kind of mood I want the story to be. Like, is it a drama? Is it a comedy? Is it, you know, I know this sounds ridiculous, we're talking about woodworking, but is it a drama? Is it a comedy? Is it, kind of action packed? Is there lots of slow-mo? Are there chips flying? Or is it more a thoughtful piece? Is it pensive? Is it, you know, introspective? Is it, you know, am I building this piece as a meditation? Am I building this piece and everything's going wrong and I show that and I'm building this tension, and then the finish, you know, the kind of B-roll beauty shots of the finished piece after all of these problems that I faced, you know, that's kind of the resolution, and the kind of like the letting off that tension of, okay, like we made it through this together, guys. Like, and so from there, once I decide on a mood is when I'll start listening to, like CinemaScore, you know, music tracks, and trying to find that rhythm, that pace, that, you know, to help me tell that story. And I'll sometimes kind of mock narration as I'm listening to a story or as I'm listening to music. And sometimes I do it while I'm driving too, and I probably look ridiculous sitting at a stoplight, like like mock narrating, you know, the video in my head. But so that's kind of the my process of, you know, what becomes a video, what becomes a project, you know, what becomes the story. And if I feel like all the pieces are there, that's when I'll like, okay, like I'm going to sit down, I'm going to make this video, and that's when I'll drop all my tracks in, and you know, kind of feel the video kind of come out. So that's how that happens.
That makes sense. Yeah, the story aspects of the beginning, middle, and end, like that's something I've always kind of struggled with, because I'm like, I want to tell, like I want to use that structure, but I'm like, I don't know how to do it when I'm just building a thing. Like, and then, so are you able to, do you basically take your footage and then edit, like figure out the story from your edit? Or like, do you going into it knowing that there's going to be some beats and there's going to be some tension just built into this process? Or is it something like crazy got to break before you're like, okay, this is going to be a good climax and this is going to be a good obstacle to get over?
No, I'm very much an editing-based storyteller. So I film, you know, if I'm filming things in my shop, I'm filming everything. And I'll get multiple angles of a thing. So what a lot of people I notice kind of neglect is the different framings of things. So I once watched a presentation from a professional, like a Hollywood movie editor. When they talk about like films, there's the film that you write, the film you shoot, and the film that you release. You know, it's from inception to, you know, actual release is, you know, totally different. Like you maybe had a different film in your head than what you released to the public. But so I'll shoot everything and I'll get Sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought. Let me get back to that. So a lot of people neglect the tools of storytelling when you're shooting even something as mundane in a workshop. So, you know, if you watch my videos, you'll see a lot of something wide, something medium, and then something tight. The wide is the establishing shot, the where are we? The medium shot is, oh, what are we doing? You know, oh, he's taking down some lumber from his lumber rack, or he's showing, you know, like the length of this rough stock. And then the tight shot is the how is he doing it? So maybe I'm chiseling out a mortise or something like that. That's a very tight shot. And I don't need to show every mallet strike of the chisel. So I might bounce back and forth between, okay, the tight shot, that's the detail shot. That's for the people watching that, like, you know, okay, but what is he doing with this chisel? And then, you know, I'll take a step back and say, okay, well, I've got enough tight shots of the chisel. People can kind of fill in the blanks. Oh, he hit the, you know, he put his chisel on the line and he hit it. Then the, you know, the medium shot of, you know, I'm in my shop, I'm working on this chair leg or table leg or something. You can see that he has his chisel in his hand and chiseling away. And then, you know, back to the wide shot of like, oh, right, we're in a workshop, you know, and there's movement, you know, across the frame. So that plays a big part in the storytelling, is just filming, you know, wide, medium, and tight shots, and not really paying attention to how many of those while I'm working. And then in the editing process is where I'll kind of take those. Okay, we need a wide shot right here.
Yeah, that's real good. And I definitely encourage people. I know you had a series for a little bit, at least on Fridays, you were doing more on the video production side of things, like some really great tips, like lighting, like you just mentioned music, so like art list and all that kind of stuff. I encourage people to check that out. But kind of as we're getting a little bit closer to the end, I actually want to talk to you a little bit about actual woodworking. So you've mentioned a few times, like you really like letting the wood kind of speak and kind of building like around the wood pieces. Like why is it, what is it about maybe just the form of wood itself? Like, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, so like Chris Salamone, so like Four Eyes,
yeah,
which I know you did some stuff with him. Like he'll talk about like, he loves like the form of the actual piece. Like almost like the, like he enjoys like the wood's great, but like it's like that silhouette is like what he's going for. And it seems like you really enjoy like this, the crazy pieces of the wood itself. First of all, is that right? And like, what about like, why do you think you're drawn to that type of stuff?
Yeah. So first of all, Chris is a great dude. We're friends. I was out at his shop a couple years ago. We connected through YouTube, obviously, and we've got similar video styles, but completely different.
Yes,
but completely different furniture styles. So he is very much. And you know, sitting down, we were we sat down in a diner and had lunch, and we, you know, we had the same conversation. This, you know, about what is it in furniture. He is very design based. He is very, you know, what can I draw on paper and then make it happen, you know, in real life. And he is all about lines. He's very mid-century modern style. On the flip side of that, I am not. I do not enjoy mid-century modern. I'm probably going to, you know, lose all of anyone who's listening right now. I know it's very popular. I'm not a fan of mid-century modern. I'm not ashamed to say it. But that's, you know, kind of the ebb and flow of furniture and periods is, you know, you get into one style, that's the style for a while, and then you move on to the next, then the next. So personally, my taste in furniture, I was very drawn to the arts and crafts movement, you know, more mid-